So all of you are single parents, and some of you I know probably have children that are your grandparents. But you know what? This session will help you. I'm a grandparent too. This session will help you with a lot of different areas. It won't just help you with your parenting. When I went back through, because I'm not a single parent, well, I'm a single parent right now, but my son's married and been married for 12 years. He's 32 years old. He married it when he was 20. And but what happens is I look around, I have observed a lot, and I have counseled a lot with people, and this is probably what you are feeling like. This zebra, who is losing his stripes, feeling the stress. How many of you have felt the stress of being a parent or a grandparent? Sometimes I feel more stress being a grandparent than I did having my own child. If someone wants to close that back door back there. We're going to divide this into like four sections today. The first section we're going to do will be talking about your role as a parent, as a single parent, or this could be your role as a grandparent or whatever, because this just deals with you. And this could affect anybody, whether you're a parent or not. These are things that we need to think about. The second thing that we're going to talk about would be your interaction with your children or your grandchildren, or even if you are a Sunday school teacher. I am a director of Christian education, so I am constantly thinking of ways that we can help children. And so that was one of the reasons I felt like it would be very hard for me to label a particular age group today, because every one of you would have children who are a different age level. And so I want to make this a little bit more general. And let's start, first of all, with you. Now, yesterday, how many of you were in the anger class? Several of you were, okay? So a couple things I will kind of go back over, but this is also to help you. I talked yesterday about aligning yourself with the Word, and I can't get away from that, because that is where it is. As a parent, you must be in alignment with the Word if you want your children to be in alignment. It's not, a lot of times, you know, as I grew up, it was, do what I say, do. But a child today, we have to model, be more of a model. I did what my mom and dad said to do. I was afraid not to, because I had good parents. I had wonderful parents, which I'm thankful for. A lot of people didn't, but I did obey. But we're living in a time where children, they just say, look at you. I taught public school. I don't think I can teach public school anymore. Because I have seen some of our kids who are Christian kids look at you and just about go, you know. And what is it in the public school? So first of all, you want to look at yourself. And that's what I want you to do in the first few minutes today. I want you to examine yourself and where you are. First of all, you need to listen to the Lord. And I might have mentioned this briefly yesterday. I don't remember if I did or not, about Elijah listening. Did I mention this? You remember the scriptures where Elijah, the Lord said, go and stand upon the mount, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains and break in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. So many times we are yelling and screaming at the kids. We couldn't hear God if he spoke to us. We are in a position where our minds are clogged with all of these things. And what we have to do is be able to say, Lord, are you speaking? My son had done this, and I asked him, I said, could I borrow that? He had had a man over here, and had the whole church was clapping, and this man was speaking a truth to him. Well, of course, he couldn't hear because there was all this noise going on in the sanctuary. And that's what happens so many times. God is trying, and this is a good time when we're here. Maybe you're together with friends, and you're talking all night, but take a little time and just everybody get quiet. I want to just hear. I want to hear exactly what you have. Let me be in alignment. How many of you like lobster? Now, I like it, but I can't eat a lot of the butter. Some people, that's their favorite food. Did you know that a lobster, to get to be a pound or a pound and a half, and those of you from Maine, I know, have a lot of the lobster, but to get to be a pound or a pound and a half, that lobster has to molt. And do you know what molting means? Got to take off that shell, and then the lobster can grow a little bit bigger. Take off the shell. I'm not sure how many times that they take that shell off in order to get to be a pound or a pound and a half. But that's what happens to us. A lot of the things that we go through as a single parent, perhaps your divorce, perhaps a death, perhaps whatever has happened to you that would cause you, God is bringing about these things to help you to take off the shell that forms around you. So many times we get a shell. I so much appreciated Brother Hughes' message this morning, didn't you? It goes right along with what I'm talking about. We have to tear off those things that we face every day. Interaction perhaps with someone who is angry. Interaction with angry children, especially teenage children today. A lot of the teenagers are so angry. But we have to grow in the Lord, and that is what we want to do. We want to tear off that shell, just like the lobster does, in order to grow to be a pound and a half. He keeps tearing that shell off, tearing that shell off. And this is a wonderful time. It was so beautiful to see the healing last night, the physical healing. But you know what? Sometimes the emotional scars are so great. Wednesday night, my son, I felt, had a lot of emotional scars because he had lived in the marriage, my marriage. And those of you who were in there yesterday, I talked some about that. And I want to be very discreet and careful what I say, but I felt that it had done a lot of scarring to him. He's 32 years old. He now pastors the church. And I had been praying, and my mother is 80 years old, and she had been going to the church every day praying for my son. And Wednesday night, the power of God fell in our sanctuary. He was preaching. He was teaching. And the power of God fell on him, and I felt an unction. I felt the Holy Ghost fall on him, and I began to claim it. I could see, and that's what we have to do. We have to see that something is going to happen. I could see that God was healing him emotionally, physically, and mentally. I could just see this. I knew, and I told him at your church, I said, son, I am claiming for a healing of your body, a healing of your mind, because what happens a lot of times when you are emotionally sick, it also affects you physically. It comes out in some manner or another. Your attitude is probably the most important factor other than the Holy Ghost in your life, because your attitude will determine everything around you. You can get up in the morning and say, this world stinks. And you know what? The world will stink all day. They often tell old Brother Starr, he used to tell this, who was the father of our superintendent, Brother Starr in Michigan, and he used to tell that about the Limburger cheese. Some of you, maybe from Michigan, might remember that. And the Limburger, he had accidentally got it under his nose, and of course, Limburger cheese smells terrible. And so every time they'd go around, everywhere he went, said, well, this room stinks. He went outside, and, well, the whole world stinks. And that's what happens with attitude, is because it's the way we feel about whether the whole world stinks or not. And if I could just encourage you, as you get up, to make up your mind every day, this is not going to be a bad day. This is the day the Lord has made, and I want to make this a great day for me and for my children. And I'm going to run through quickly the baggage that sometimes we bring as single parents. One is self-pity, and I told you yesterday the story about how that I had searched for happiness for about 30 or 31 years. But finally I must be a slow learner, but finally it dawned on me that the happiness is here. It does not have anything to do with anybody else. And when I realized that, I was happy. I am so happy that I can't stand it. The second thing that happens a lot of times as a single parent is depression. Or as a single person, I went through a period of depression about 2 years ago, and the doctor said to me, I think you have clinical depression, and that is very serious when you have clinical depression. I have to give you medication. And when you're depressed, you go from the bed to the sofa to the sink to the sofa to the bed. Have any of you ever experienced depression? All right. You just can't seem to get up. You can't go. I had a friend that broke up with her boyfriend, and she's a beautiful girl that is so clean, but honestly, I don't think she even took a bath for a week because she was so depressed. She just couldn't handle it. Depression sets in sometimes. And so I went to the doctor, and he gave me some medicine. And I said, I took a half pill, and I was deathly ill for 24 hours. With something like Prozac, and you know how what a bad name this has had. I said, God, I am not taking this. I'm going to trust in you. And it took about 4 or 5 months, but God filled me of that. The third thing that happens to us, we bring guilt, because a lot of times, as I said yesterday, you have a certain amount of guilt. You may have done something wrong, and so you have guilt. But then a lot of times, you feel guilty just because you're single. You feel like, well, maybe I did something wrong. I could have done something better to save my marriage. You have to get rid of the guilt. Then, of course, I spent the whole session yesterday on anger. And if we are angry inside, we are going to let that anger out on our children. It will come out on somebody. And why do we do it on our children? Because they are innocent. And because they are available. So we have to guard against the anger in our life. Then, as a single person, you also can look at other people with envy. One of the first time I went to a wedding after I was divorced, it was very hard. I tell you, one time during my marriage, I sat across from a nice couple, a well-respected minister from another state, and I sat there and I thought to myself, I don't understand why my husband can't be a godly man like this man. Lo did I know that the man sitting across from me was involved in a situation and had been for years, and it came out. You know what? That taught me a lesson. It taught me a lesson. You can't ever look at someone else and say, well, I want someone like you. You might end up having someone just like you have. That wasn't what I had thought in my heart. My thought was, why can't I help someone like you that is a man of God? I want to really clear that up. Exhaustion, that is something that comes against you because you have so many factors in your life. You are exhausted. I have a friend that I met at Singles Conference a year and a half ago, and we've just become the greatest of friends. Her name is Nancy, and she lives, Nancy Cantu, and she lives in Arkansas. Goes to the Springdale Church, Hassel Church there. And she has 4 children, twin girls who are about 7, a boy who's about 10 or 11, and a daughter who's 17, and she's raising those kids by herself. She is a manager of one bank, but she also helps manage a second bank. She is also plays the organ at church and sings and does a lot of different things. You talk about exhaustion. A lot of times she calls me late at night, and I say, Nancy, how do you do it? Where the energy? You have to be able to prioritize things. But she's always so happy. And, you know, this is great to hear her because she has such a good attitude with all these kids. Honey, if it were me, I would probably be standing over the corner crying somewhere, you know? Then Brother Hughes today so well addressed fear. I mentioned that I was afraid at night. We are afraid that we're not going to have enough money. We're afraid we're not going to have food on the table. But you know what? God has not given us the spirit of fear. I quoted that yesterday, but he has given us the spirit of love and of power and of sound mind. And you know what? God has provided in every situation. I told you about the IRS. Man, I could have been sitting on the street in a tent because you know how the IRS operates. Right after my divorce papers, this IRS audit was there, and I went through it for 2 years. What happened, At first, it was like, God, where are you? But then it was like, God, I've got to trust in you. But I sure can't trust in the IRS. So when it was all said and done, God turned it all around, and they gave me thousands of dollars. And at the time, I needed it desperately. How many times have you needed money? God will not forsake you. He has not given us the spirit of fear. That goes right along with the economic devastation. My mother had told me once, she said, look, because I have a really nice home, and a lot of times you have to sell the home and divide it. I didn't. God was good to me. But she told me, she said, I'd rather have peace of mind than live in a tent on the side of the street than live in the finest of places. And that's true. God will provide if you will do your part. And that's what you want to really examine yourself. Am I doing everything that I can do? Have I lined up to the Word? Again, we get back to that word, alignment. Just line up with the Word. You know what? I'd rather do too much than not enough. We are living in a time, and I spoke briefly about this yesterday, and I love my family and my sister very much. It's just the two of us. But they have gone this direction, and I've gone this direction. And this is the way I feel. I had rather do too much and make it and not have had to do it than to do too little and not make it there. We are too close to the end to do anything else. And how many of you felt like this? When I woke up this morning, I had one nerve left, and now you're getting on it. Every one of us, even if we don't have children at home, feel this frustration, don't we? And look at the hairdo. My friend Jim Leonard from our church works for Kmart, and he does a lot of this stuff for me, and he is so talented, and I thank him so much for that. Focus on your children or your grandchildren. In fact, this is a great thing, because if you focus entirely on yourself, you are going to be the most miserable person in the whole world. If any man would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You see, you have to deny yourself, and the sooner you can get through your divorce and your feelings where you can give to your children, if you go too long, your children will be too far out because they are hurting as much or more than you are. You say, oh, that's not possible. It is possible. They are hurting as much or more than you are. Think about it. We are living in a world today where children may have four sets of parents. We have a child that comes to our church, some children. We never know where we're going to pick them up. Half the time, they don't even know. One of the little girls was only about 2 or 3 years old that came. We don't have too many kids that come like that, but she came and didn't even have underwear on. She had to dress herself. And she didn't know where her underwear was, and she dressed so she could come to her. She must have been about 3 at the time. I mean, that is the desire to be in church when you are about 3 or 4 years old. We're living where there are all these different grandparents, all these parents, and half the time they, well, what are they going to call them? Whose mother? Whose father? Who is the grandparent? Half the time they don't even know. So if you are totally focused on yourself and thinking, I'm going to get to the kids when I get over this, you know, as I said yesterday, I admire so many of you because so many of you are so much farther along than I was. If I had little kids, God knows who to give the little children to or our children to, because I might have killed somebody, you know. It is hard when you stand. There are three parents in our church that I look at with such admiration. One mother has a 10-year-old, and her husband is involved with drugs. And he goes there every other weekend. He's 10 years old. He's just recently been in jail for it, the father. I have another man, the 7-year-old daughter. He sends her in every week to live with the mother who is in a constant party. Another mother was weeping and crying, and I might have mentioned this yesterday. standing at the front door of the church, and I said to the usher, what's the matter? And he said, just a minute. And what had happened, the ex-husband with his living girlfriend had come to pick up the 7-year-old daughter at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. Why wouldn't she cry? We must deny ourselves, get past the point of where we need to. Let's look at ourselves, get rid of the baggage. You say, well, I've had this baggage a long time, and I'm not going to get rid of it instantly. No, you probably won't. But you can be aware of it and realize and start to work on it so that you can give to your children. Self-denial. So many times we live in self-denial. We deny that our children really need something from us. They're going to make it just fine. A lot of times we deny what is happening to us. It is hard to accept sometimes some things. But as Brother Hugh said this morning, we will not begin to heal until you recognize that you have a need. So many times we look at ourselves and we think we are a whole lot better than what we are. One of the most important things I think that has happened to me, I just have prayed, God, help me to have your mind. And God helped me to see myself as you see me, because a lot of times we think we're a whole lot cuter and better than we are. And God can, I often tell my son, I don't tell him this much anymore because God's really done a work with him, but I used to say, man, if you don't get straightened up, God's going to knock you flatter than a flitter. You know, that's the term from the South. I still carry it to the North, you know. But it's true. We've got to get ourselves together, accept, understand. Don't avoid the truth. So many times we avoid what we have lived in. We still try to, this man that has a 7-year-old, he's been divorced now for a few years, and he still wants to go back into the situation with his ex-wife. You have to face reality. And I tried to tell him, I said, look, you can't tell anybody else what to do, but I said, sooner or later you've got to face that unless there is a miracle from God, she is not going to come back to you. She's living with a man. And sometimes it's hard for us to face reality. And I talked yesterday about codependency, and that is where when you have lived with someone, their behavior affects you, regardless of what it is. If the alcoholic, the sex addict, maybe the overeater. There are a whole lot of different behaviors that can affect us and our children that we have to look at. Talk with other single parents for support or ideas. And make time for it. You're saying, how can I make time for it? I don't have the 24 hours a day. You have to have rest and relaxation somewhere, though. You must, or you will break down. There comes a breaking point. Maybe swap babysitting with a friend or something. Enlist the help of parents or grandparents. Make time for exercise. And I want you to notice I don't have my sling on today. A lot of times I took it off here in church, and it's still a little stiff, but it just felt so much better. It was worrying, and I said, I'm just taking this thing off. It was so wonderful to see the healing that it happened. Exercise. I thought, I am just going to get myself in shape for Columbus. I have a health rider, and I fell for like 2 days, and I broke my arm. Well, needless to say, I'm standing behind this podium so you don't see me, but not really. But I didn't get myself in shape. Of course, I couldn't get myself in shape in 6 weeks anyway. Took a lot longer to get myself to this point. But we do need an exercise program, because you think better when you exercise. You feel better when you exercise. You get lethargic when you don't ever exercise. And this time away from children, you have to find some time. You say, well, I'm away from them all day. I work all day. But you have to have some time for yourself. And I'm glad to see you here. I'm sure you made arrangements for your children so that you could be here. And then friendships. You say, you know what? A lot of you probably lost friends when you got divorced. Some of you aren't voting today. Just shortly, not too long before my divorce, they say that if on your hand, and I want you to think about this now for just a minute, if you can count at the end of your life five friends who have stuck with you through thick and thin, you can count yourself a very fortunate person. So I want you right now to think of your five people. And you think, I don't have five people. Well, you know what? I listed five people shortly before my divorce, and I want you to know that I think I only have maybe one of those people still around. Because a lot of times your friends as couples. My very best friend that I thought would have been my friend for life, that knew all about me and my situation, we've been friends, best friends, very, very best friends for 11 years. I no longer hear from her. Not only do you grieve for your divorce, you grieve for your friendship. I had already grieved for my marriage before I ever went into my divorce. I grieved probably more after my divorce for my friendship than I did for my marriage because I had already grieved for my divorce. The codependency issue where we are so affected and our happiness is so hinged and we try to control everything and everybody. We want to grow. We want to grow spiritually. Let's get into the interaction with your children. Your children are affected in an adverse manner by death or divorce. They are left with scars and emotional turmoil. This does not mean that when they are grown that they have to be emotionally scarred. They will always have certain scars, but they can be better. Let's look at the top of the second page. If you try to help them identify their pain, try to help them. They're hurting just like you are. What you want to try to do is to help them get out what is hurting inside of them. They can become better and stronger children and adults because they have gone through certain things. Going through the fire, they can come out as gold. Don't avoid discipline. And this is an area where a lot of times, if you're a single parent, you avoid discipline because you want them to love you. They won't love you more. They will love you less if you do not have discipline with your children. Children should be responsible for their own feelings and behavior. When you protect your children from the consequences of their behavior, you are protecting them from learning. They have to learn from what they do. If you always, I have a person that I'm thinking of, and she protects her kids from everything, it's never their fault. If you protect your kids and they have misbehaved and you protect them, sooner or later they will have to face reality. Hug them. Do you hug them every day? Do you tell them that you love them, or at least the time when you have them? Avoid the spending trap. And of course you're saying, well, where are we going to get the money to spend anyway? But sometimes you maybe just haul out that plastic because they're there and you want to give them everything that you can think of. Avoid the spending trap. Because you can't buy their love. Try to find a hobby, and this goes for grandparents too, try to find a hobby that you enjoy together, because that will create a closeness between you. I paint, I play the piano, my granddaughters want me to teach her, I don't play that well, but I play the piano. She's wanting me to teach her the basics of piano. Try to find some things that will bring you together. You must set boundaries. You know what? God sets boundaries for us. Why does God set boundaries for us? Because it's for our protection. It is not to hurt us, the boundaries that He sets. He makes boundaries for us according to His Word so that we are protected. When you set boundaries with your children, if you do not enforce those boundaries you set, you might as well not put those boundaries there. There is nothing worse than being inconsistent with your children. There are a couple words, three words that if you don't remember anything else from today, I'd like for you to remember. One is be consistent. Don't tell them they do one thing today and tomorrow beats the fire out of them for doing it. Be consistent. Set your boundaries. That's the second word, boundaries. set certain boundaries or limitations. There have to be boundaries and limitations in their life. And the third thing is, teach them obedience. Because if they are obedient, they will, if they're obedient to you, they will be obedient to God. If they're not obedient to you, they will not be obedient to God. How many of you found that true? You must train your child. That's what the Bible says. It says, train your child in the way he should go and when he is old. You see, every day, are you speaking the word every day that you have them? Maybe you don't have them but for a weekend. But if you will speak the word, if you will talk the word, the Old Testament says, write it on the doorpost, hanging around your neck. You know, they had these things they hung around their neck to remind them about God. What is that telling us? We must speak the word. We must teach them from the time they get up. Just have little things that drop in, little thoughts that you can drop in and say that they will remember. So the word is in the heart. I want to talk just a minute about temperaments, and then we'll go to another area. There are five temperaments. And how many of you know what yours is? Okay? Just a few of you. Sometime, if it's ever possible, I'd love to teach a class on temperaments, because if you understand temperaments, you can understand your children so much more. You can get books on this. The first temperament is sanguine. That means that you like to be the life of the party. You like to talk a lot. You want people around you all the time. That's sanguine. Maybe, okay, now think about yourself and then think about your children. Is my child like that? Some of the weaknesses of sanguine is they don't always finish a project. It's hard to finish projects. There are strengths and weaknesses in each one of these. Choleric, some people say. Choleric, some people say. But it's really choleric because choleric is a hot-tempered person. Choleric are people who are leaders, but they can be mean. They can be very, very, you know, it's going to be done this way, like, you know, a drill sergeant, da-da-da-da. But on the other hand, and let me tell you some Bible people, sanguine was Peter. Peter would stand up, man, he just stood up and said, well, I won't deny you. But he didn't follow through. He didn't deny. Choleric was Paul. Man, he killed them. Didn't he? All right. But then when he was turned around for the good, what great good he did. The third one was Moses was a melancholy. He went and stayed 40 years on the back side of the mountain, man. So go by yourself and settle there for 40 years. That's a long time, isn't it? Melancholy are people who are perfectionists, you know? Some of you may have little bits of all of these. Melancholy was like Moses. He didn't want to be a leader, but he was a person that could lead. Sometimes they are leaders. A lot of times they're insecure. Phlegmatic is a person who's a peacemaker, such as Abraham. Remember, he said, well, Lot, you go ahead and take the best land. So Lot took the best land. He was a peacemaker. And a supine is a person who is an assistant or who helps. They love to give. They love to serve. When you understand these different personalities, these different temperaments, it will help you to understand your child and how to deal with them. When you work with people, if you understand their temperament, it is so much easier to work with someone if you understand why they do what they do. And if you understand their temperament, you understand that. If someone could help me just a second, I want to give out a sheet here. Two sheets. Two or three people could help me do this real quick. Give these out to everybody. And give these out to everybody. I thought about trying to take off one of the parents on here as a family. Children are a great comfort in your old age. and they help it help you reach it faster too. How many of you understand that statement? And this shows the family. Well, just because that you are one parent does not mean. Before we go into the goals, we have the last thing that we're going to talk about ways to improve your relationship with your child or your grandchildren. And this has been something that I think is so good. I think this will really help you. This is something you want to keep so you can refer back to it. Anybody have one of these, the ways to improve your relationship with your child? Okay, number one, first of all, is to understand behavior. Now, there are four reasons that children misbehave. They are trying to tell you something. Number one, they want attention. And they will do things. My granddaughter is 7, and we have the new baby. Well, she's doing all kinds of things to get attention. So you want to try to find out what their behavior is, and if you can understand why they're doing what they're doing, then you can help them. You can't help them as long as there's a verbal battle going on between you and the child. The second thing is, and a lot of times in a divorce this happens, they want power, and they will do everything they can to put the father against the mother. All right, so you have to understand that this is one of the reasons for misbehavior is the power struggle. They want to be in charge. The third thing is revenge. They may be angry for what has happened to them. Sometimes they turn to drugs. Sometimes they turn to sex. They want the father, especially girls, they want the father to love them, and they feel the father has abandoned them. So they're looking for love, and they will have sex with a lot of people. They are trying to get revenge for what has happened to them. And the fourth one is a display of adequacy. How many times have you ever seen a child say, "Oh, I just can't do that." But you know they can. They can't cut out the circle on the paper. "Oh, I can't do that. I can't pick up the scissors and cut." Focus on your child's assets and strengths, not his fault. If you're not careful, especially a person who's choleric, which is what one of my traits, I'm choleric, melancholy. But a lot of times, you will just list their faults. It's hard to find their good points, because what you do is you zero in on the negative things, and that's not what you do. You have to zero in on the strengths and the assets. That's what you want to expand, not the negative things. And if you zero in on the negative things, that's what will expand in their life. How many of you have ever seen a girl go with a boy and you try to stop it? They're determined more than ever that they're going to go with them if you're having difficulty. Number two, understand your child and yourself. Now, that's the study of the temperament. Our feelings are influenced by what we believe. Be kind and show respect. In other words, treat your child like you would your best friend. Show them respect. Controlling, dominating, overprotecting, and pitying all violate respect for your child. My daughter-in-law, I so admire her because she's done such a good job with the kids. Alyssa, she will give her 2 dresses so that she can make a choice. That is teaching her how to make a decision. Me, I said, "Here, you wear this." My son didn't turn out good. I've learned a lot, so I'm trying to help you. But help them learn to make choices, the right choices. A friend of mine here the other day said to me, "Am I too, do I protect my kids too much?" And I said, "I think you do." When they turn 18 years old, I had a friend like that. Man, the mother, she just was like, overprotected them. When the person became 18 years old, he went wild, and he has never come back. Serve the Lord what he should. Give encouragement. Make your child feel good, not bad. Show your child how to do things. How many times have we said, "Go clean your room"? Does he know how to clean his room? My son used to take all the dirty clothes and the clean clothes if they were laying around, and I'll put them all in the dirty clothes basket. So I ended up washing a lot of clothes that should never have been washed. Show confidence in them. Help your child use his talents and feel good about what he does, his successes, but not just his successes. Help your child feel good about other people's successes. You don't want them to be self-centered. You want them to be giving. Effective listening. You cannot help your child if you don't hear them. How many times do you just tune them out? But you must hear what they're saying if you are going to be a good parent. Reflective listening means that you listen to what they're saying, and then you say it back to them so they can hear what they've just said. Maybe you say it in a little different way. On the back side, effective communication. My son always talked more to my mother than he did to me, and I really wish I had had a more open, he would tell my mother anything. He doesn't anymore. He did when he was about 15. And mother now, she's 80. Well, he just doesn't talk to me like he used to. But if you can talk with your child, he might not always tell me, but she would end up telling me, and so I would know what was going on. But it was so much better if he were to just talk to me. So if you can keep that open communication so that you can hear what they're saying, it begins, first of all, with listening. Don't you do all the talking. Let them talk, and you listen. They will tell you what they're doing. They'll tell you all about themselves if you will really listen to them. Communicate faith in your child through words, gestures, and your tone of voice. Let them know you love them and you have faith and confidence in them. As long as you're saying you're a dirty scum and rat, just like your father. Or the father says, da, da, da. I'm sorry, gentlemen, I don't remember. Salt your communication with Scripture. Talk the Word. Memorize Scriptures. Teach your child Scriptures. My granddaughter, she can quote all kinds of Scriptures. She can quote all the Ten Commandments because Mom talks constantly the Scriptures to her. And one of the best things, the other thing that I want you to remember that I think will help you more than anything, and that is, I've always believed this but never knew what it was called until I started doing research for this particular session. Help your child keep an open spirit. When your child closes their spirit to you, or any person closes their spirit to you, you cannot help that person. How many of you have ever tried to talk to someone who had a totally closed spirit to you? All right? Your child, you must try to maintain an open spirit. Your child is either hurt by something you've done, or he has a hurt that he thinks you've done. So in a way, there are certain things that you have to do to try to open up that child's spirit. Become tender-hearted, gentle, and caring. Increase your understanding. Try to understand where they're coming from. You might say, I don't understand this. They're doing all these crazy things. Try to find out. Try to have some understanding towards the child. Recognize if you have offended the child. And don't be afraid to say you're sorry. A lot of times parents think it's a weakness to say, I'm sorry, I've done something wrong. It is not. And attempt to touch. A child who will not let you touch him, there is an area there. Touching will bring, how many of you have ever seen a child that's like this? But if you can, we were very, very close. And then he went through a period of time where we weren't very close. But thankfully, one of the things that I did, I turned it over to the Lord, and my mother and I prayed. I let him know that I loved him. I cared for him. He was torn. Your children are torn. They need time and you need prayer. And those two things working together will bring them around. Seek forgiveness if you did do something wrong. Let them know that you have unconditional commitment to them and that you have unconditional love. You are going to love them regardless. You may not agree with everything they do. I was very strict with my son. I don't regret that at all. I let him know what the boundaries were, and he knew what the repercussions would be if he didn't stick with them, and I stuck with them. I tried to always be available to him. And as I said, those three words I'm going over one more time: consistency, boundaries, and obedience. Let's look at the goals. Here's one more thing that I feel like you will want to remember. My son used this in a Bible study the other night, and I asked him if I could use it. A goal, well, it was not a Bible study, it was for our leadership that he had done this. A goal is first a picture of the future, all right? A goal is a picture of what you want to see in the future. It is a statement of faith. As a parent, you need to set goals for your children, and you need to set goals for yourself. You want to raise a child who, and you're going to look at me and say, that's an impossible thing, this list that you've made here. No, it is not an impossible thing, because if you can see this as a goal, if you can see this as a statement of faith, it is going to come to pass. I just thought this was one of the best things I had ever heard. I want to look at the future for myself and say, I want to see this in my life. And I'm going to believe God for it. Why can't we believe it for our children, our grandchildren? Let's look at this. Love God and is filled with the Spirit. Is responsible and hardworking. Is able to form deep and long relationships. Is obedient. Laughs at the right things and is happy. Is caring and sensitive. Has strong convictions, stronger than the peer pressure. Develops their potential to the fullest. Is rooted in the Word. Let your child know the Bible is the absolute Word of God. Let him know that he can't barter with God. This is not on your sheet. But he cannot barter with God. He cannot barter with the Word. God's laws are absolute. He can't pick and choose. You can't decide you will take chapter 1 and leave off chapter 2 and take chapter 3 and leave off chapter 4. You have to take the whole Word of God. And you must live the Word. Don't you think this is these are good goals for your child? Think about it and say, Lord, I am claiming that, and that's what I want you to do today. I want us to claim this. And I apologize for not having you stand, because I know you're weary. We're just almost through here. But I really feel this is one of the things I want us to do today. Say, Lord, I see this for my child. I want to believe this for my child. Make it a statement of faith that you are going to believe this, that God is going to help you bring this about. Four things you should tell your child every day. The Lord is with you. The Lord loves you. The Lord hears you when you pray. And the Lord only wants your best, and He will give you His best. It's the very last thing today. Let's look at the goals for you on the very last page. This also is not on your list. I only had 2 days. Sister Brenda Greer was supposed to teach this, and I only had 2 days to get this together, so I had to do a lot of things after I sent in the outline. Make your home a place of peace, a place of praise, and a place of order. Peace, praise, and order. When there's chaos, verbal screaming, you will not have a place of peace. Isolation is devastation. Don't isolate yourself. Brother Hughes said this so ably this morning. Don't isolate yourself. Get up, get out, and get going. A lot of times, you know, I said yesterday, my friend said to me, I said, because it took me 30 years, 31 years to find happiness and be happy with myself. And I said, I'm so happy with myself, sometimes I just like being alone. She said, don't like it too much. Well, I don't like it too much, but I do enjoy my own company now. And there was a time when I didn't want to be around me, but there wasn't much I could do, was there? How many of you ever said, well, if you could just take your mind out and set it on the shelf, you know, and then go back and pick it up because that mind keeps going? Some of you are looking at me like you think I'm not sure. Let go and let God become your sufficiency. You cannot do it. Now you're looking at me and saying, well, Sister Reed, what are you telling us? You cannot do it. You have to have God to help you. There is no way in this day and time you can be a single parent, a good single parent, really, without God's help. God is going to have to help you. And the sooner you realize that, the farther along you're going to be. Prayer is essential. Bible study is indispensable. Tomorrow when you get up, you have a chance to become anything you want to become. Nobody's holding you back. There's not a soul right now that's going to be holding you back except yourself. Because with God's help, you can do anything you want to do. Maybe when you were married, you were hindered. We have a lady in our church who was married to a man who was a heroin addict. At one time he served God, and then he went back on God. But before he came to the Lord, he would throw her shoes away, and she was at church every service. He came to God, and backslid after about a year, went back on drugs. She ended up divorcing him. I watch her as she is less than faithful to church. What is the difference? It is a time when she could be so faithful to God. She was faithful when she lived with him and he threw her shoes away. But now she lives alone and she feels like she can't make it to every service alone. Don't become disillusioned. Realize we are at the end. This is your chance to grow. This is your chance to be a powerful Christian. You know, when Brother Stonehenge came to our church several years ago, he did so much to change. His preaching changed my life because I came to the point at that time to realize that I could pray for someone else. I didn't have to wait for someone to come in from headquarters or someone to come in from wherever. You see, you are just like anyone else here. No one else here, really, if you want it, could have any more gifts or any more from God, and you're looking at me like, you don't know what you're talking about. I do know what I'm talking about. Any one of you can be a powerful person in God. If you're willing to make the sacrifices, talk to some of these people, such as Sister Kerr, Brother Stonehenge, some different people. I know some of their stories. They have not had a bed of roses. They've had a bed of roses with some thorns. But what has it done? It has made them powerful people in God. I told Sister Kerr like that. I've never seen her so anointed. She was tremendously anointed of the Lord. This can happen to you. Do you want to be anointed of God? Do you want your children to be anointed of God? It was so beautiful. My 32-year-old son, as I watched him Wednesday night, he was so anointed and so in tune with God, and the power of God was all over him. And it was all of the church because it was all over him. It was there. You can make the difference. Praise and worship bring victory. For you, Lord, have made me glad through your work. I will triumph in the work of your hands. You know what? He is molding you. He is making you. And you have gone through some things. I can see it in your faces. You come here weary and tired of battling with the kids. I hope something that I have said to you today will help you with dealing with your children. Don't become discouraged. Put it on the altar while you're here at this retreat. Walk out of here, going back home, a totally new and different person. You say, oh, I'm going back to problems, and you don't know what I'm going back to. Oh, yes, I do. I've been there with almost everything. But you know what? Today I stand up here. God has done something for me, and He will do it for you. See, we used to say, well, you know, it took David 22 years to do this, and it took somebody else this one. And a few times I said, God, how long? But you know what? It comes if you believe. Your goal, your statement of faith should be that you and your family walk with God. Let's stand and ask the Lord to help us with this today.